Join us as we cover many an insane movie and numerous cult TV phenomenons. Are you ready to get jacked up? Are you with us? Then listen on.
Today we got Don and Ellie from Horror Countdown Podcast.
Yeah, hey, what's going on? Thank you for having me. I really appreciate being on board.
So we are talking about just sharks. Just what should have been the number one shark franchise, that is Jaws. Just in time for Shark Week. So when did you get into giant monster movies in general, Donald?
Pretty much ever since I first got into films. I remember distinctly the very first film that I ever saw graduating from like kids programming and like that kind of stuff into like proper films was actually Rodan, the Japanese kaiju film. That was actually movie number one. So I was always kind of steered onto the path of loving monsters and creature features almost from the beginning. So
nice. Okay, so kind of the same tooth and nail as me, just wanting to see just giant monsters just decimate, you know, giant cities and do just outrageous things.
Yeah, pretty much. Growing up, kind of really focused a lot on, Godzilla and Kong and, you know, all the
kaiju.
Yeah, all the traditional kaiju stuff. That was kind of one of the, early starting points to, getting into, traditional genre fare was, seeing a lot of, these kinds of films nominated alongside, the Japanese variations and, kind of just wanted to check them out because it's like, well, if you like this one, maybe you like that, and figure, okay, well, maybe they know me better than I know me, so these other people and other lists are more renowned and more respected on the opinion, so I kind of just trusted their judgment, and here we are. I guess they worked.
What is it about a giant monster that just in general just can sometimes make a movie, let alone be better than in need of a better movie to be featured in? They're that memorable, they're that good at causing destruction or being a campy creation.
For me it was more just the spectacle of the matter. That was my thing, was just seeing like the spectacle and the destruction, and it's like, wow, that looks so cool. And it was something fun and different than, just seeing a bunch of people just, talk to each other. Like, that kind of got old really fast. So that's kind of like, well, I don't really, like, go into that kind of stuff too often. I wanted something happening, and, it looked good. Some of it's campier than I was less forgiving of it back then. So it kind of just, got into a lot of the cheesier and sillier stuff, but I still hold a lot of still have a lot of fun with them, so they're still some of my favorite films.
Nice. So was, out of all the giant monster movies that, or small in some cases, that Spielberg's produced or been involved with, was this the first of his many, or were you like me where you had seen Jurassic Park and Gremlins first and then went back to this?
I don't remember a lot of the earlier stuff that I kind of was getting into when I was growing up. I don't remember specifically. I know Jurassic Park may have been first just because one, dinosaurs, and as a
everyone
kid,
had know, seen it by the time there were five, you know.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure Jurassic Park may have been first, but beyond that, they kind of get a little, you know, the dates are kind of mixed up with a mishmash of other childhood memories. But I can say that Jaws and Gremlins and a couple of other stuff were really close to them, like right around the time when I first got into it. So they would be early genre watches, if nothing else. Anything more than that, it's lost in a haze of you know, childhood memories and, you know, other stuff that I can't recall at the time. But yeah, definitely for sure Jurassic Park was first. Other than that, yeah, I can't say much more definitively.
Okay, no, all good. Do you think the very first one is still just in Spielberg's just top 10, or do you think it's a little overhyped, controversial?
The original Jurassic Park?
No. Original Jaws.
The original Jaws, yeah, for sure. I mean, I look at that not just as like one of the 10 best, one of the 10 best genre films ever made, but I would probably have a convincing argument that it's one of the 10 best films made in the history of cinema.
Totally.
Yeah, I would be quite shocked if I made if I made that list and Jaws is not sniffing. Is not on that list somewhere, and I would be pretty shocked if I did that and it's not on that list. Favorites? Okay, now that's a horse of a different conversation. I you know, favorites? Okay, I mean, it's not one that I go back to and rewatch frequently, but best made and best all time. I would be very shocked if it's not on the top 10 at some point, maybe even top 5 if I really sat down and thought about it, but for sure top 10. If it's beyond that, I would be quite shocked.
Yeah, I never had any issues of it. I would sometimes use that movie just to creep out my friends and family. They just, to them, it was like The Exorcist. They did not want it in their house. They were so terrified. I'm like, but it's a great movie.
Yeah.
You can't not
see
it.
I mean, that's kind of the way I was. I kind of was with one of those like side-eye looks for my parents when I brought the I remember I had the two-disc VHS. So that shows you how far back this goes. I think it was like the 25th anniversary one where they had the movie on the first cassette, and then the second cassette was like the making of with like all the behind-the-scenes footage and stuff like that. Yeah, I remember getting that. I don't remember for like, it was like a birthday of some kind. And I remember getting that. And I remember getting like side-eyed looks from my parents. It's like, you sure you want to watch that? So yeah, I kind of got a hint from something like that. Because I mean, they weren't really bothered by all the other stuff I was watching. But then I brought Jaws home and it's kind of like, okay, I'm starting to get like weird looks. So it's kind of, you start to like really think, you know, you start, that's like the first time you really start thinking about, you know, should you be watching stuff like this or, you know, anything like that.
Yeah. I always had ways around it. It's like, okay, well, if I watch it on modified TV, that should be good enough. But it is interesting how, yeah, is like, you had to just learn to just kind of respect other people's opinions, let alone why you like a movie, why your peers do or don't like it. And you just had to say, okay, it is what it is. But I know why I react to this movie. I dig it. And yeah, I'm with you. I can't, Jaws and even the first Jurassic Park, I like to see people make fun of the practical effects, and I got no place in my life for that snobbery. I'm just like, no. You don't get to say this is a piece of shit. just because of some part of it that you think is outdated if you've grown up watching this. And yeah, some movies do eventually you get sick of and you change your opinions on, but like this, both the first Jurassic Park and the first Jaws, I think are beneficial in that they bring so much to the man versus, you know, deadly nature subgenre. And it, you know, Spielberg understood how to take a B-grade premise and make it be a spectacle you wanted to see in the theater. And there's more to it than just the visual effects and the surround sound. And you actually really dug the characters and their hysterical one-liners. And again, just the whole experiment gone wrong. You know, there's a reason he's the king at it. He knows how to make it be more than just an alien knockoff and be a very intriguing just material.
For both of those, I actually have anatomical issues with the creatures more than effects driven issues. The shark in Jaws is not anatomically accurate, but that's not really a detriment at any kind. The way it's integrated into the film is spectacular, and I love the way that it comes off. You know it's there, but you don't see it. You see all the, little glimpses here and there, and you see, you get the one shot where he attacks the guy on the boat, and, you just see the mouth, but it's underwater.
Mm-hmm.
But, you don't get to see, the full shark, head until, the very end when, it pops up and, does the famous jump scare. But, when you look at it that way, you can tell, anatomically, it's not like an actual shark. Like, the mouth is just too wide and the head is too fat. And, there's issues like that, but it's not like, you're really going to, go to task and, say this movie's a piece of crap just because it looks like a fake shark,
And, filming of it, he realizes, okay, it's not going to be 100% convincing. So, again, you got to save it for the final time. Use it when you actually got to use it. And,
yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, it's not, effects-driven issues. I have anatomical issues with the way that they look, both the shark and the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park. But, they're not effects-driven issues. They're just, anatomical issues. And Jurassic Park, I understand that because, discoveries have been made since that time that have shown, Rexes had feathers and, Dilophosaurus didn't have the frill and, raptors are, for those that don't know, the raptors in Jurassic Park are not actual velociraptors. They're a different species altogether.
I wouldn't be surprised if, they're going on outdated data.
to give you an idea, the actual real world velociraptor barely comes up to a person's knee. They're about the size of chickens and small dogs. So they're not child-sized predators, that are hunting you down. They're, barely the size of your knee. So, it's issues like that I have with Jurassic Park. It's not, how good the suits or the CGI integration looks, because those to me are still flawless. I still look at that as the pinnacle of CGI.
Before it became overblown and
the schlocky go-to creatures that you see in Independence Day or all the I can stay here and list all the schlocky Sci-Fi Channel straight to TV garbage that I admittedly enjoy it, but I'm never going to be one to say the creatures look good or they look realistic. It looks trash, but I have fun with it because it is. But going back to Jurassic Park, the integration is just absolutely flawless, and I love the way that it pulls it off. And it's just the same thing in Jaws. The real footage of the sharks interacting with the model that they built, which doesn't look good, but it's fine for what it is. And it's an issue that I don't see as meritful or any kind of detriment to the film as a whole.
Okay, very, very cool. So again, sequels were inevitable. Spielberg exited stage right because the first Jaws, you know, again, friend of both our shows, you know, Darren Wilson, you know, summed us pretty well on VD Clinic on how it's just one of those, it's very dissimilar to the book, much like even Jurassic Park in a way, because some of those characters just aren't all that interesting. They're kind of egotistic assholes, and that would just be very uninteresting when it comes time to take a movie. So it's interesting how they gloss over a lot of just the, you know, stuck up mayor, you know, not listening to anyone's, you know, worries about
potential attacks. Yeah, a lot of the, you know, rightful flaws in the book were taken out and replaced. So, yeah.
Sheriff Brody is just a captivating person. And again, Richard Dreyfuss was great as the researcher. And, you know, Robert Shaw did a great job rewriting his own dialogue and making an interesting, you know, Captain Nemo or, you know, just Hunt for the Beast kind of predicament, you know, Moby Dick kind of feel. And I mean, that's how it had to be. I mean, I got all I needed to know about how this mayor is going to do the wrong thing because he's a politician. He wants to still make some money hustle under the table, you know, so I need tourists to come by to my town, even though it's plagued by shark attacks. And, you know, and with that all being said, I mean, it's just interesting how a lot of the Jaws knockoffs hit into that in a little more detail. Like you had Joe Dante's Piranha, which is how he got the Gremlins gig, is, you know, Spielberg is like, hey, you know, he can take a joke and he's a very clever filmmaker. I need to give him a bigger budget. But you look at Piranha, is like that got pretty much went into areas where Jaws would have never gone, where it's like, here's the mayor. And by the way, he's going to have a great gory comeuppance after more people have died at this tourist attraction, you know. With Jaws 2, basically they, you know, you just feel there's kind of a reason a lot of these filmmakers have worked in mainly TV. It just kind of feels like it's a TV movie follow-up that just so happened to go to the big screen versus small screen.
I definitely agree. It's got like a very flat, very just like dry presentation to it, and it doesn't really have like the liveliness or, you know, I guess you could say like the adventure feel that the original had. It goes more for very like true. I mean, you know, I can very easily see a lot of the comparisons that it feels very much just like a slasher film. You know, it has like,
yeah,
you know,
it could easily be teens getting killed at sea. And
yeah, it's very much thing, you know, like, I mean, it kind of has like a dry run for that where it's,
and that would be fine in its own right. There were plenty of classic, you know, 70s terror films,
right,
that were on antenna channels or on TV and, you know, freaked people out. And they said, wow, you know, that years before, you know, the movie channels took over and wanted to bring cinema straight home. And I would see this on TV and I'd get bored at it every time. Revisiting it, I think it has its moments. It's a perfectly competently made movie, but at the same time, it's just got a little too much dead space. And it,
yeah.
And when you get to the chaos that you came here to see, you also just too often just feel like the characters are just by the numbers, just saying stuff that you're already thinking. So it just distracts you from the fun that you're seeing on screen. The effects, I think they still do the trick. It's just, again, it's just very spread out. John Williams did return to do this score, and that's how I kind of even, believe it or not, knew that there was a Jaws 2, believe it or not. Because I IMDb wasn't the thing it is today where it was second nature. Like I was, you know, looking up people's resume and then I'd go on other sites just looking up stuff. And it's like, yeah, it's like, his score, I think, still kicks. It's still pretty suspenseful and frightening, but it's kind of bigger than the movie.
I definitely agree. It's, it's good for what it is, but, you know, its main issue is that it follows, you know, the definitive 10 out of 10, you know, five-star film. And it's not, you know, that's kind of like, you know, that was always like my main issue with that is that, you know, Jaws is like the Mount Everest, and this is kind of like, you know, Mount Kilimanjaro. You know, it's still an accomplishment, no doubt. I mean, you know, there's, you know, still something to be said for, you know, scaling it and conquering it, but you don't get the notoriety or the recognition for conquering Mount Kilimanjaro that you do for conquering Mount Everest. So, yeah. In general, like you said, it's a competent film. You know, the chaos at the second half is a lot of fun. You know, big animal just eating people left and right. You know, that's got a lot of fun to it. The shark doesn't look too bad, but I think there's one too many shots looking down its throat where you see the animatronics and it kind of just kills the illusion. But yeah, overall, it's enjoyable enough, but, you know, like I said, you know, the main problem is that it follows Jaws, and, you know, if you're expected to top it, you know, this one doesn't even, you know, begin to scratch the surface.
No. And good luck doing that. You know, it's just, what can you do, you know? It's an acceptable, but yeah, like you say, unremarkable sequel. Altogether, I mean, it's pretty solid. Again, it's not something that you're going to talk about.
It's a movie you've watched, but it's not something that you're really going to be, you know, like, oh my god, you guys, if you're looking for like this big, you know, hidden gem under the radar kind of genre, for check out the Jaws sequel, it's awesome.
It's just so interesting. You know, I was even reluctant to do this to begin with because I just had such bad memories of the other ones, but you know, you could probably understand if someone even had some nostalgia, you wouldn't be able to really get behind, oh, it's better than the first. Fuck no, but it you could still probably get into the whole, well, I mean, it had some taut moments. I can see someone doing a double bill with this and some other drive-in back in the 70s, late 70s at this point. But yeah, I mean, it's another interesting experiment, and it wouldn't even be a movie that would even be easy to mock because, like, it's just so professionally made, and that sets it apart from all the other ones, which are gonna, you know, as we go on, are just have a lot of wrong sauce in them. So this brings us to Jaws 3D. Yes, 83. They were trying out all kinds of 3D maneuvers, including some movies that became long lost cult films that only obscurely showed on TV. I mean, they did that with one of the Amityvilles, I think, the same year. So yeah, they tried it with Jaws, and someone forgot the part where, oh, by the way, let's actually properly render the 3D for home video use, since that's the main selling point. This one gets some other kind of easy to mock stuff because it's just Louis Gossett Jr. shortly after, you know, becoming an Oscar winner and then descending into TV and less remarkable movies. And, you know, you had, again, Dennis Quaid, who in an early career move and who reported that he was very high on set during the making of it. And it really does show when you look at it a little more closely. He's just very excited one minute and low-key the next.
So I actually do kind of like this one. I know it's not a good film. I know the effects in this are probably the weakest in the entire franchise, but I still have fun with it. I like that it's the shortest of the bunch. You know, it's a fairly fun, it's a fairly compact and short film. I do like the fact that there's a twist involving the two sharks. I like that, you know, it does something different with them.
How wild how all the deaths from these first three movies were referenced in Deep Blue Sea. You know, it's just,
yeah.
They had three sharks that they had to kill, and that's how they kill them, is through electrical wires and
Yeah, but see, when we're talking about stuff like that, I really don't notice. I'm not a person that's going to be like, oh, well, they did that, you know, such and such movie. That's, you know, total ripoff. It's like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. You know, how are you going to pull it off? So I never even caught on until I read later on that Deep Blue Sea actually did that, where they grabbed the three deaths from the sharks as the three deaths in the, you know, Jaws trilogy. I never even caught that. And okay. I really don't even care. It's a non-issue for me. For me personally, I find fault with people who find fault in something like that. I'm looked more as, you know, it's integrated into the story, and that's, you know, how I take it. I don't care that they ripped off the deaths in Deep Blue Sea from the deaths in Jaws. It's a non-issue, and I personally have more of an issue with people bringing it up as a detriment to the Jaws series rather more than anything. But it's not something that I really like go in depth about. It's just, okay, yeah, so what?
Well, the main issue is half the time when someone addresses like a critique, you don't know even nowadays if they're just listing the first trivia they see off of IMDb or if it's more of a, well, you know, everyone else has an issue with it. Was like, okay, but do you have an issue with it?
Right, no, yeah, that's not kind at of all. Like why. Yeah, that's kind of like why I'm like I really don't like entertain those kinds of people that say that, because, you know, oh, everybody says, you know, it's just the same three deaths, and it's like, yeah, okay, what about yours?
Really, it just comes down to, again, like you say, the story is like, I'm okay with a homage versus a total just copy and paste. And then there's other times where the copy and paste is okay. Like there's plenty of movies that like say do ripoffs or are just derivative of something like maybe Speed or The Fugitive or Friday the 13th. And it's like, that's okay. They were already kind of considered movies that were knockoffs of those other movies. So it's like, if you're a knockoff of Scream, that's okay. Scream was kind of a homage or a love letter to 80s slashers. So it's like, it's, again, it's all in the eye of the beholder. And it's also in just what do you take away from it versus, oh my God.
Yeah, well, one issue. Well, I'm saying, I mean, you know, we were talking about Jaws. I actually really love Carnosaur. I think Carnosaur is awesome.
Just too much fun. And I mean, it knew what it was. It's a Roger cash in on.
And that's what I was saying. I mean, you know, like you were saying, it's, you know, pretty much up to the end of the viewer, but. I'm just saying, you know, if we're talking like, you know, is, you know, homage versus ripoff, I utterly love Carnosaur. I think that movie's just a blast.
Totally. And you shouldn't have to ask Roger Ebert, who liked both that and GP1, you know, for permission. You know, it's like, you like
what right,
you
like. Yeah, exactly. Like I said, I know the effects are terrible. I know that that's just a fiberglass shark in the shark tank that they're trying to interact with and pretend that it's, you know, the dead infant that they're trying to keep alive. I have a lot of fun with it. It's, you know, fairly fun. It's, you know, a fast-paced effort. Dennis Quaid is, you know, zonked out of his mind half the film. What's his girlfriend's name?
Oh God, it wasn't Leah Thompson, was it? Was it?
I think it was, yeah, because I think that was her. Yeah,
it's interesting how they make him be like a cousin of the Brody family, some shit.
No, it's Mike, and it's the son's all grown up.
Okay, so yes, that's it. And see, it's just not even something I'm even paying attention to because, again, the plot is so focused on all the other stuff going on, where it's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, so I'm saying, I think it's the two sons all grown up.
It is interesting how, you know, that sets the predicament for part four, and but we'll get there. And yeah, part three, I'm with you on this watch. As frustrating as it was, I can understand how there's just kind of some goofy fun to be had in it still. This is kind of one of those, you know, it's like well, Jaws 1 was basically Trilogy of Terror. This is basically Trilogy of Terror 2. Is like, it's not known for being good, but you watch it anyway. And it's an interesting predicament in that, yes, it's just on it. Again, it falls victim to pacing, but at the same time, it is interesting seeing, again, all these actors bring, kind of having fun playing these characters, especially Louis Gossett Jr. as the crooked, you know, head of this SeaWorld type corporation.
Yeah.
It's just, it's one of those, even when you get the connection to the first movie, like who the hell these characters are, like, it really honestly doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, it's basically just meant to be a repeat, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And it is a shame that, of all things, they decided, no, we're not going to bother remastering the effects for home video. I mean, why would you take away your main, what was the main money on the screen, you know? That would be like taking out all the porn in a porno, you know? Like, why would you do that?
Exactly, yeah.
I don't understand, and seems like they just, that's how much care they put into it, but or they weren't happy with it or what, but I'm with you. There are some moments where it's like, okay, well, this music is just blaring a little too loudly. It's just reminding me of how much better John Williams' score is, but at the same time, it's an interestingly paced moment when you get to those, you know, kills and everything, and at the same time it is one of those just weird cult movies where you kind of want to know more about it, even though it's very sloppy, and yet at the same time, like, I can't say the production value was bad. It kind of reminds me of when, you know, there's a reason AMC would do all these marathons. It does kind of fall into that, well, just have all the James Bonds, you know, on and see which one holds up still, you know. It just,
yeah.
You kind of get that gist after a while. It's like, it's a weird movie marathon, and even though it has no business being what it is, you just kind of can't help yourself. You're like, okay, well, I kind of want to know what made this what it was, even though it's just ridiculous. It's an interesting movie in that it could have gone any way it wanted to with having a massacre happen at SeaWorld, because it does make you wonder what would happen if something like this happened nowadays.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, like the concept of, you know, like the shark loose in the, you know, water resort or water park or something like that. You know, I mean, you know, like the closest we get is, what was it? Piranha 3DD. Because, yeah, I think, you know, I mean, it's not, you know, a shark, but I think that that's kind of like, you know, the closest we've ever gotten to something like that. So, yeah, the idea was there. It could have been like, you know, a fun little campy, you know, B-movie kind of a thing. But I still like it for what it is. I mean, yeah, it's, you know, not as good as, you know, even 2 is, but there's still some fun to be had with it.
It would have been interesting had they just left it there. You know, it's like, where would the saga had gone from there? Like, the third part by default is almost always going to be probably a weaker installment. And so it already has that working against it. And then, like you say, you kind of want to just, the trivia behind it is still pretty intriguing.
Yeah. What was it? Jaws 3 People 0 or something like that. It was like, you know, a spoof. Or yeah, because I'm saying, I think I remember that that was like, you know, the first incarnation of what the story was supposed to be, and then they ended up changing it and they turned it into I don't really remember, like, but the SeaWorld theme park kind of a concept was like the fourth or fifth idea that they had, and they went with that one. So I mean, yeah, I would have loved to know, like, what were the other failed things once they moved past that spoof concept.
I can't fault the final kill of the, you know, gory teeth falling towards the screen, you know, because they didn't even remaster it for home video. So if it doesn't look right, that's because, well, the filmmakers didn't properly restructure it for home video.
Right, exactly, yeah.
It's an interesting movie that, not while not completely inept, still has just some weird, just, it constantly disappoints, and yet you can't take your eyes off it. It's just one of those, it's like, if it's like if you were to go to the least intriguing ride at Disney World, and yet you still kind of want to see what'll happen.
Yeah, it's kind of the, you know, that's a great way to put it, I guess.
I try. Brings us to number 4. The widow gets attacked. Has to avenge another son's death. Best known for being one of Mario Van Peebles' first movies. And to complicate things, depending on what version of the movie you have, he either survives or dies in the movie. That's just how confusing this movie is. There's like 3 different cuts of it. Like TV version, theatrical version, and home video version. So, weird history for an infamous movie. And then Michael Caine starring in this, and it, of course, is the movie that bought him a mansion the same year. He got the award noms for and wins for Hannah and Her Sisters. So, it's got one hell of a weird-ass cast. And, boy, howdy, I've struggled with this one. And I didn't watch it for the longest time because of the infamous just appeal around it. And yet I almost kind of secretly kind of think this could have been maybe movie number 3. It's like, instead of focusing on all these other, you know, the sons, you know, focus on just, you could have merged part 3 and part 4 together. Have there be a massacre at SeaWorld that ends in the death of the son, and then have the widow and the older son try and team up. But no. Just wasn't to be.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of look at this as maybe more of a soft reboot. It was like an early, like, you draft. Know, rewriting. Yeah. It's like an early rewriting of the timeline, because it kind of never really mentions 3. So, I mean, you know, it never really mentions them working at the park. It just says, you know, they're back in the same town, and they're not really mentioning anything again. So it's kind of like, you know, they moved, it's like, you know, it's like 1, 2 and then 4 kind of. It's yeah. Like, you know, 3's, it's like 3 is kind of like the forgotten one in the timeline, but then, you know, I've always had a really kind of complicated relationship with it. I mean, I was like you, I've always never really been one to like go to this one as like a, you know, constant viewing. Just because I've always kind of been like a little turned off by like a lot of the effects, a lot of the, you know, sluggish pacing.
That's when you know something's gonna probably be annoying, is when it's like, okay, if you can't get the effects at least right, then why do I want to sit through all the other
hassle? The shark model is like falling apart. You know, they can't even waterproof it. I mean, I can't even count the number of times I've seen the, you know, underwater track pulling it through the water. You know, that they can't frame it out of, you know, camera shot or something. A lot of that is, you know, like rightfully derived. You know, it's terrible. But I'll tell you what, and this is the one thing that I've kind of come to recently with this one, and one of the reasons why I'm a little kind of more favorable to it recently, is I like what it does with the mother. I like the way that it portrays her grief, and it portrays her, you know, her mental instability, and, you know, just the psychotic devotion to kill the shark. And a lot of, you know, what we're doing in modern times, you know, with all of this, you know, like grief and trauma process, and, you know, what goes on in, you know, a lot of, you know, these kinds, you know, like the more modern films that we're getting today, this is kind of like one of the early precursors to what we're getting now. And I think it's pretty good at it. It's not, you know, great. I mean, you know, we're not necessarily talking like the best material here, but I do like that it does attempt to try it, and it does try to portray her grief and her trauma as, you know, something worthwhile and something to, you know, yeah, like, you know, she finally is like, enough is enough. I've got to do this. I've got to stand up and take this on, or it's going to keep haunting me for the rest of my life. And however hokey, you know, the setup is to get there, however plot holes that I can find that can, you know, determine how a, you know, 20-foot shark can make a 1,300-mile journey in 3 days, you know, how, you know, shark is able to find this family that it's never known on land and somehow carry out this vendetta against them. I still like the way that it portrays her grief and her mental instability as this hurdle that needs to be overcome, and it's using the shark as the metaphor for doing it. It's an interesting idea. It doesn't work in a shark movie because you want the shark. You don't want to see the people. You know, you want the shark chomping on the family, but I do respect that it does give it props for trying that. I do like that it is, you know, an interesting idea, and it's a different concept than what's been done before. Again, does it work? No, but I do give props that it tries it.
I know what you mean, though. And, I mean, once again, he's they got filmmakers who, you know, vary by movie. Joseph Sargent's another late filmmaker who did all kinds of movies. He did MacArthur, The Night That Panicked America, the Mannions of America miniseries, and even the horror anthology Nightmares, you know, so it's interesting in that it's just like, okay, everyone's here to play ball, and I mean, you want to give every movie the benefit of the doubt, and, you know, no fair just not checking it out just because, you know, an actor didn't return, but then it also gets to where it's like, well, see, it just can't, it just still feels like a very cheaply done cash grab that doesn't deserve the money, because it just is, they have just decided to just take away so many of the positives. And again, you want to give everything just the benefit of the doubt, but also, you know, when it gets to just so distracting where you just want it to work and just so much of it is just, you're forcing yourself to just finish. That's when it's just like, okay, well, and the fact that there's like even different versions of it with or without the shark making that just bizarre roar is like, why is this even in the cut to begin with? It's just like,
yeah,
it doesn't.
I mean, like I said, I mean, almost everything involving the effects in here are just absolutely god awful. So I'm not surprised that they decided to do that as well. I mean, I can't even describe how awful it was seeing the model on screen when it blew up.
Oh yeah. That's just it. It's like, this is what you're here for. And it's been so much just of a wait just getting here. Again, you want to just have fun. You want to just, like you say, it could have worked. It could have been intriguing seeing Mrs. Brody kind of has a bit of post-traumatic stress in a way, you know, where it's like she feels like she's the only thing keeping this town from, again, being overridden with sharks. They could have even had multiple
that would have been interesting about, you know, having more than one.
Where you just start getting reminded of how they might as well have just had just all the knockoffs and, you know, considered ripoffs of the various Jaws films. Just, you know, when they, you know, something's up when they got better ideas than what's supposed to be canon. And that's something that most people will always overlook because they just can't get beyond a ripoff. It's like, a ripoff is fun if it's more creative or just, I mean, I'll go so far as to, I can respect a ripoff if it is shameless and it doesn't pretend to be anything else. It's when it gets to, okay, you know, we just honestly just don't care. We're just getting by and just bullshitting just to bullshit, and or we're doing deliberately bad just to jump on the Sharknado factory. You know, it's like, let's just, everyone, just do you and let the dominoes fall where they will. Don't, it doesn't have to be more than that.
But pretty much. I mean, I do like a couple of the knockoffs.
No, like I mentioned Piranha before. It's like, Piranha's just hysterical. And
Yeah, Piranha is awesome. I really like this Italian one called Tentacles.
Yeah.
About a giant octopus.
Night of the Sharks is fun, even though it's mostly a crime drama and sharks are in like the last 10 minutes.
There's another one out there, one called Cruel Jaws. I don't know.
This is why I like this more than the last two sequels. Cruel Jaws is... I mean, it knows what it is. It's Bruno Mattei being his own crazy self. You know, he's like Tommy Wiseau. You can't tell him what he's going to make. He's going to just make it. And but he, again, he knows what he's making. He's making a goofy, you know, ripoff of Jaws using illegally obtained footage that he didn't have clearance for. It's interesting.
Yeah, I have a lot of fun with it. It's just shocking how much he gets away with. I mean, like you said, all of the footage in this is illegally obtained. I mean, he doesn't even shoot one single frame of original footage with the shark.
No.
But I mean, it's just fun, man. You know, he paces it perfect. He paces it pretty well. It's, you know, not necessarily like a very fast film, but it's not very dull or boring either. And, mm-hmm. you know, he even goes back and the thing I like about this is he goes back and he goes into the original novel and he pulls out the subplot about the developers overrunning the town with their mob connections and sort of being like the influencing how the town responds to the shark attacks. Yeah. I even really like the fact that he pulls that little bit of that little piece out of the you know, like the forgotten sands of time almost, and puts it into this one to sort of like show up Jaws as like, okay, well, you weren't going to do it. I'm going to do it. And I'm, you know, I'm going to use your footage as well to do it. So.
Totally. And I mean, yeah. I'm glad that they finally got clearance to release the Blu-ray of it. Finally. I don't think it was Vinegar Syndrome, but it was one of those. It's like, yeah.
Severin.
That's what it was. Yes. Like you say, it gets to that point where it's just like, okay, it knows what it is. It absolutely knows what it is. You don't have to worry anymore. It's like it's doing all the talking for you, and you're just guffawing at the absurdity of it.
Exactly. I mean, that thing is just so goofy and so cheesy and so badly made that it's really one of those that it's, you know, so bad it's good kind of a films.
Oh, very well said. So let's do a rank. I'll let you go first.
Okay. So since we're including part five in this,
the unofficial part five, yeah.
Yeah. Since we're doing that, I will say Jaws 2, Jaws 3, Cruel Jaws, and Jaws 4.
Okay, perfect. I got the same ranking, except Cruel Jaws is in front of Jaws 3 and 4.
I can see that.
Cruel Jaws is basically one giant fart joke, and it knows it's a pretty crude joke, but it just blurts it out there to where it is like, hey, no sense of being annoyed. It's honest.
Exactly, yeah.
We love honesty. We love bluntness. And part 3 is just, again, there's some fun in it, but it's just... It's a lot of effort getting to it. It's like all this various food, and yet it's just was in the oven a little too long, and it's just overbaked, even though you typically would like it on a Friday or on a lazy Sunday. And pretty much it just comes down to these are graham crackers that, and you're just eating them because they're the only ones left in the cupboard. But yeah, like you say, part 4, you know, could have worked, and yet it just even when you force yourself to get over the, you know, actors bad mouthing it and not coming back and other bizarre casting, it's got too much working against it. It's just the whole franchise has blown its load by that point. And
yeah, pretty much.
Well, so what can we expect from the one, the only podcast of yours?
Okay, so my main show is the Horror Countdown podcast. It is a weekly top 10 show. me and a guest, we get together on a topic and we do a top 10 list. So as of now, I've done everything from top 10 ghost movies to top 10 shark films. Guess which one made my list?
I couldn't tell.
Yeah, no surprises from this discussion what film made the list, but I mean, I've also done a you know, stuff on top 10 female teens, so it's kind of a broad subject, and it's been a lot of fun. Yeah, you can find it pretty much everywhere. I think I've got it on enough podcatchers that it's pretty easy to find. I mean, at least I've had nobody come to me and say, I'd love to check it out, but I can't find it. Where is it? So, you know, it's available, I would imagine, on pretty much most services out there. I also do another weekly show, No More Room in Hell Presents Fresh Cuts, which is just affectionately known as Fresh Cuts for shorts. It's mm-hmm. a weekly look at the biggest horror release of the current week. You know, theatrical, VOD, streaming. You know, we usually get together and take a look at it, review it. So those are pretty much like the two places to find me. Just a little bit of warning. Because Fresh Cuts is also known as No More Room in Hell Presents, it doesn't have a separate feed. So, yeah, if you want to, like, check that one out, it's better to subscribe to the No More Room in Hell feed. You'll be able to find it because Fresh Cuts is a weekly show and No More Room in Hell is a monthly show. So there'll be more episodes titled Fresh Cuts than No More Room in Hell. So it'll be easy to find. There's going to be more of those, but that'll be the place to find it just because we don't have a separate, you know, account for it.
I love what you guys do, and hence why I invited you on here.
Well, yeah, thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Any other franchise or saga you might take on at some point?
I have a couple of plans in motion. I can't say for sure just because we're waiting on some timing to work out. I believe I'm doing a top 10 Argento retrospective soon.
Mm.
And there's been a discussion on doing top 10 killer car films.
So, well, obviously the car is going to be on there somewhere.
But. Yeah. Yeah. That was going to be kind of fun. It's not just, I believe it's not just killer cars. I think it's just top 10 cars, but because, you know, far more memorable are the killer versions. I think it's going to be pretty heavily leaning towards that. But I believe with that one in particular, I'm waiting for the guests' schedule to clear. They're doing some other shows, and they've got a couple of engagements to get to first. So I can't say for sure when I'll get that one out, but I can say I think that's going to be some of the more recent stuff that'll be coming out soon.
Okay, sweet. Sweet, so sweet. So, again, thanks for owning this.
Yeah, thank you again.
We'll return after these messages.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast cure-all, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin puff, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pott's disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema Psyops is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this?
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest of senses, disappointed in you.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie, jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. Oh, I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that.
Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get
it's
out of.
It's unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you shouldn't be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this movie.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist.
Watching this film again, I had all of this like little nerd glee with everything that kept
little history
up.
Doll yeah, popping
absolutely.
Up at you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you know, couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was.
How
be
did
a rough
you watch
movie.
This shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema Psyops.
Hey everybody, I'm Corey
and I'm Zach. And we're the hosts of Podcasting After Dark, a cast dedicated to late-night horror and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, often found on HBO and Cinemax.
You know, the movies your parents didn't want you watching as a kid. You can find us every other week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher.
This is what you want.
This is what you get.
Greetings, friends. My name is Dean Legiro, and I'm the host of the 3324 Podcast. I invite you to join me and my lifelong friend Eric Huber to come with us as we discuss the music and movies that shaped our life. Each week, we'll pick an album or film that we really connect to, and not only give you some great info and trivia, but also discuss, debate, and celebrate what it means to us and the journey it took us on. We also look forward to hearing from you and giving us some of your picks for us to check out and discuss. I think it'll be a really fun experience, so come along with us for the ride. You can find us on your favorite podcast provider, and at 3324.buzzsprout.com. Thanks for your time, and welcome to the 3324 family.
It's time, let's check our cue, baby. Pair it with a couple brews, baby. We love good movies. We love the bad ones, too. So we watch them all and pass their lessons on to you. Oh, yeah.
Everything I learn from movies helps to make life a little bit groovy. We're the one last plot holes of gratuitous movies. It's time to get busy with your friend Steven Izzy.
At EILFM.podbean.com.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.